Hello everyone, my name is Ryan and you are listening to the Vegan Report. As you might know, Captain Paul Watson, the founder of Sea Shepherd and the Paul Watson Foundation, has been arrested in July of this year by Denmark's authorities. And this podcast is your chance to learn more about what's happening, since we are talking to someone who is in close contact to Paul, Representative David Michel. David Michel is an American politician who is a member of the Connecticut House of Representatives from the 146th District in Fairfield County. In addition to talking about Paul Watson's wrongful detention, in the second part of our conversation, we delved into the world of American politics. And you don't want to miss that, because David shares with me these unbelievable stories that clearly demonstrate how awfully dysfunctional the political system is. David, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for having accepted my invitation. Welcome to the Vegan Report.
Thank you, Ian, for your invitation. I'm honored and looking forward to have a fruitful discussion.
Wonderful. So, David, I want to start by talking about Captain Watson. And I know that, you know, you have been an activist with Sea Shepherd for years now. And I want to get, you know, your opinion on what's happening, and maybe you could give us, you know, behind the scene of what's going on with this arrest of Captain Paul Watson. But before that, you know, for people who don't know what's happening, let me just read a passage of an article from the Japan's Times. So it reads, this year, Japan launched a new factory ship to process whales caught and expanded its catch list to include fin whales, the world's second largest animal, deemed vulnerable by the International Union of Conservation of Nature. Watson's new organization, the Captain Paul Watson Foundation, says that its vessel was on its way to intercept the factory ship, the Kangemaru. Then Watson was arrested in Greenland's capital, Nuuk. In mid-September, Watson's lawyers contacted the UN Special Rapporteur on Environmental Defenders, saying that he risked being subjected to inhuman treatment in Japanese prisons. So basically, Japan wants to have Watson in their prison and, you know, judge him on Japanese soil. The lawyers have argued that Japan's extradition request is based on false claims and say they have supporting video evidence. And then some new development this Wednesday. So we're recording this on Friday. The Nuuk court has refused to view the footage, arguing that the hearing so far, including one this week, extending Watson's detention until October 23, are solely about his detention and not the question of guilt. So I'll give you the mic, David.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. It's an important subject, obviously. So yeah, I've been volunteer and campaigning for, I think, maybe 15 years, maybe more than 15 years. I'm not sure. I don't count. I count my vegan years. I'm about 10 years vegan now. Close. Yeah, so the first in the media and also in the blogs, you could see that the Kangemaru is the new Death Star, the new factory whale factory ship that Japan has just built. And the idea, of course, with the John Paul de Joria vessel from the Captain Paul Watson Foundation, the Neptune's Pirates, was the idea is to refuel in Nuuk, Greenland, and then go through the strait in the north and then fall back down to the Pacific Ocean and meet the Kangemaru while it does its whale. And of course, try to interfere as it's illegal whaling. It's not for research. It's for business. It's for food.
Because that's...
Yeah.
Yes, that's what they say. They say they're doing this for research.
And we know that it's not true. And even their activities, which falls back to the Interpol Red Notice in 2010, 2011, 12, all their activities in the Southern Ocean in the whale sanctuary were deemed illegal by the International Whaling Commission in, I believe, in 2014, and addressed what was happening before. Now, the Interpol notice is for the is for sending Paul. I'm missing the word right now. Sorry,
Extraditing.
extraditing Paul to Japan is based on truly on him ridiculing Japan. And by trying to uphold international law where nobody else is upholding international law and fighting those against and interfering with these illegal activities. Now, there's also the idea that somebody got wounded, like a Japanese sailor, or got burnt by a sting bomb. A sting bomb doesn't burn. We have footage of the sting bomb landing on a deck with no one on the deck, where no one can be seen. And we also have footage of a Japanese sailor with the big equipment shooting something in his back and shooting pepper gas at the Sea Shepherd vessels and against the wind and literally coming back in their face. And I believe that pepper gas will burn your face if it's liquid in this liquid form and hitting your skin. You're definitely going to have a problem with that. And so that footage is being refused and dismissed by the judge and prosecutor currently. Now, it's not Japan that really got him arrested. First, I consider Interpol part of the reason of this. They shouldn't have such a false pretense of a red notice. Red notices are for terrorists, people who kill people, violent people, dangerous and violent people. And Paul is not that. And so there's a problem with the use of the Interpol's red notice. That's a problem. And I think Interpol there is responsible in some part for what's happening to Paul, which is I truly see this as injustice. But let's also bring back the issue to the Danish territories. We found out a couple of weeks ago only, and this is late in the game, that the Faroes police, who are Danish, so the Danish territories like Greenland and the Faroes are part of the Danish territories, and the Danes or Denmark wants to keep those territories. And for example, the Faroes voted, a majority of the Faroes is voted to be independent, and Denmark ignored it. It's a great geostrategical point, area for Denmark, politically speaking. And so that's, I think, explains why the Danish Faroese police use their own boat and participate in the slaughter of dolphins. They call it a slaughter of whale. Grindadrap means. Grind means whale, and Grindadrap means the slaughter of whales or a killing or murder of whales. The idea was the Faroese police called the Greenlandish police to tell them, hey, we know that the John Paul DeJoria with Paul Watson on board is going to stop in Nuuk in Greenland to refuel. That's also Danish police in Greenland. They're Danish as well. Like the whole judicial system and the police and the service, they're basically they're Danish living on those islands with the island's uniforms of the police. And so the Faroese police, which is Danish, called the Greenlandish police, which is Danish, to tell them, you should use the Interpol red notice to arrest Paul Watson. Now, why would the Faroes do that? Because we are there every year in the Faroes, not only Captain Paul Watson Foundation, but Sea Shepherd France. And I'm sorry about that. and the rest of whoever was in the past involved, like Sea Shepherd Global and US, they have very little presence there, actually practically none, but they pretend that they're there and use that for donations. I will not go into that too deeply because that's another story. But we're present every year documenting dolphin slaughters. They prefer it to be called the slaughter of whales because whale, quote unquote, is traditional food for them. But to kill dolphins, mass slaughter of dolphins, an entire gene pool, like a whole pod, with engine boats, revving their engines and scratching the dolphins, and making a wall of sound, just like in Tai Chi at the cove, and to herd them into a beach. That's not what was done traditionally. They were traditionally hunting from boats with no engines and with spears. That is far from what they're doing now. So there's nothing traditional about what they're doing. There's nothing cultural. It's just a blood sport. So they hate the fact that we interfered with that. I believe it was in 2014. Sea Shepherd France and Sea Shepherd UK at the time. Sea Shepherd UK became Captain Paul Watson Foundation UK, by the way. Just making sure people understand that. Sea Shepherd France remains Sea Shepherd France. And so they've always been present, and the only way of interfering with it is really to have boats that counter the work of the other boats. That's pretty much the only way. A year ago, the John Paul de Joria did breach their waters, and there was a court case. I was at that court just as a witness, where they basically, it was like a kangaroo court, like a farce, just like the other court for Paul right now in Greenland, where there was nobody to defend themselves, and they just held the court and declared they were guilty, and that was it. And most people that spoke were the police, which are Danish, and the Faroese police, and they were the ones putting the case up, and everybody knew each other in the court. We did have I think a decent lawyer from the Faroese. But there were fines given to attributed to Paul and to the crew of the ship for breaching international waters. Yet nobody heard the defense that the reason why they did this is there was an emergency in accordance to the maritime law, and there was going to be a slaughter of cetaceans, which is enough reason in the eyes of the captain to breach Faroese waters and try to interfere in an emergency situation. Could he make it on time or not? That's also debatable, probably not, but at least he tried, and they tried to make a presence there, so to bring also eyes of the world on this issue. So Paul now is in jail for over 70 days. He went to court on Wednesday, which was 2 days ago. Again, the judge for the third time refused to see the evidence that exonerates him. And said, well, it's not even about that. It's about the accusations that are worth him staying in jail and being extradited. Now, what a lot of people are not saying is that in order for him to be extradited, first, this would have to go down to Denmark first and go to their, I guess, Supreme Court, so-called, and also to the International Court of Justice, because there is the idea that. Not the idea, the knowledge that Japan's judicial system is like back from the medieval times and is violations of human rights over. And Paul will definitely be a dead man going into jail in Japan because there's a price on his hand with the Yakuza, and the Yakuza are involved in the whaling industry. So this is the work pretty much of the Faroese with the help of Interpol, who's letting this kind of an elective, I would call it a bullshit red notice. Sorry, this really bullshit red notice. So already Interpol is involved in this, and I think that they really should act better. And then also with the help of Japan, but Japan and the Japanese red notice with Interpol is really being being acted upon because the Faroese called the Greenlanders. And that's what's going on. And so Denmark, now where sits Denmark? Denmark is a country that seems to believe in climate change. Where is their understanding of real laws? Where is their position about human rights? Normally they're good. By the way, Paul is treated differently than the other detainees. I think there was this, was it the 60 Minutes? There was a 60 Minutes about jails in Greenland and how it's like incredible. It's like a spa almost. But Paul doesn't get the treatment that other detainees get. He has no access to internet, to computers, not even, they don't even want to give him a typewriter so he can answer to people writing to him. And if I remember correctly, I heard on the Vaquita news channel that I believe there were over 2,000 letters that he had received. And, he's replying to a lot of people. He replied to my letter. I sent him my letter or my sort of a report of things going on through Lamia, president of Sea Shepherd France, who was going to see him in jail. So she printed it and he replied to me. And in his reply, he explained why his handwriting is tough to read because his hand got injured by the handcuffs the day on his first court date. And they tried to help him out of the van and his hands were stuck and that hurt his left hand and he can't write the way that he normally writes. So, and it was difficult to read. But I also think it was difficult to read because most people are not used to read handwriting anymore or are not used to writing anymore. Even myself, I've found when I write, my writing is becoming worse and worse. So that's what's going on. I'm calling the judge and the prosecutor in some way corrupt with a bias and not doing their due diligence because they're dismissing evidence that dismisses the accusations of the Japanese. Although they're just also going, I believe they're also using the boarding of the ship. But again, we had one of the members, which was oh my God, Pete Bethune, who actually went on the ship, boarded the Japanese ship, then ended up in jail in Japan, and they made him sign a document that was a lie. And then as soon as he was out of jail, then he went to see lawyers and dismissed that he was forced to basically make that comment in the Japanese jail system. And that the allegation was that Paul ordered the boarding of their ship. Absolutely not. There was no premeditated action against that ship. There was just reaction to actions from the Japanese. Big injustice. I think that it's important to write to the Prime Minister, Mette Frederiksen. I think it's important to write to the young, new head of the Ministry of Justice in Denmark, whose name is Peter Hummelgaard, Hummelgaard. And I think that these are the two key people to target with letters, emails, hashtags, tagging them on posts and saying, what's going on? Why is Denmark doing this? And I've also often mentioned that this is becoming a huge carbon footprint for Denmark, the arrest of Paul Watson. Why is it a footprint? Very simple. If you understand the science of the ocean and the role of the whales in the ocean, they're the gardeners, right? The gardeners of the seas. These are Paul's words. I'll never take them from him. The whales are the gardeners of the seas. They maintain the sea forests and the phytoplankton that benefits from the whales is basically the main like carbon absorption and oxygen production part of the ocean. And including the phytoplankton is the food for the zooplankton. So for the is the food for the baby fish and baby crustaceans. So without the whales, you lose biodiversity and you lose carbon absorption and oxygen production. There's the cruelty part, and then there's also the impact on the planet, which is people ask, why do you go in the Faroes? That's their thing, like why are you going to go there and tell them what to do? I said, no, I'm just hoping that the Faroes themselves realize what they're doing because it has an impact on the whole planet. Cetaceans are precious. They're part of the Operators, again, Paul's words, the operators of our life support system. Why am I using Paul's words? To make you hear what Paul says. And that's what he's about. He's not about hurting a Japanese sailor. He's not about war. He's about peace. He's about ending suffering and protecting sentient life. And he always mentions the science, because sometimes people don't care about protecting sentient life. Then brings back also the science behind it. It's very simple. We're eating and we're killing the operators of our life support system. So how much longer can our spaceship function, spaceship Earth, without its operators or the operators of the life support system? So there we go. Of course, I wish all the best to Paul. It's very saddening. It's frustrating. It causes anger. There's no questions. I want to say that the Danish are incredibly crazy, insane to let this happen. And how can the Danish Ministry of Justice have such an obvious dismissal of due diligence by a judge? And how can a prosecutor inflict a very different treatment on Paul as a detainee than other detainees? Why does she have a word on what medication he can have? I don't know if you read about it, but for a couple of weeks they no longer want to take his medication, and they give their version of the medication, and he has apparently it's not working well for him. So Lamia showed up 2 days ago, or I'm sorry, 3 days ago, and to give him the new meds, and they refused the new meds. They refused anything she brought. So suddenly they're becoming even more strict. He can't receive anything, doesn't have access to a typewriter, can't answer. He has, I think, 20 minutes a week to speak to his kids and wife.
I read 10 minutes.
I mean, or 10 minutes. I mean, it's absurd. And regarding his medication, this is non-assistance to personne en danger in France. That means non-assistance to somebody who is in danger in terms of health-wise, and they're not assisting him. So what, they're going to let him die in the jail in Greenland? The Danes are insane. They should immediately stop this charade, this farce, this kangaroo court, this clown court. It should end immediately. That's my personal thoughts. I'm not speaking on behalf of the Paul Watson Foundation. I'm not speaking on behalf of Paul. I'm speaking on my own terms. And also kind of as a state, an elected person, as a state representative, because as an elected official, that's the one thing you don't want to see, is the judicial system being purposely biased. You know, the judicial branch. So I'm shocked at the Danes for letting this happen. It's in the Danish territories. But I think they also don't want to cause a rebellion in the islands, and then they don't want to lose those islands. And so that's why they're assisting them in all of this stuff. And I think it's a tragedy, and it's making them look like a kind of a country that's actually not really down with climate, fighting against climate change, or protecting our climate, protecting people. If you don't care about the one hero that's capable of leading a fleet to interfere with illegal activities in international waters, which no other country does, you're going to allow him to be arrested in your territories and accused on BS charges by criminals, and he's the one in jail? That's a serious problem with their judicial system. So I think a lot of tension should be put on the ministry, Danish Ministry of Justice.
Yes, my perception of Denmark has completely changed from
Me
this
too.
story. It looks like a banana republic now, from my point of view. It's
I like
it,
that. Yep.
yes, crazy. Now you mentioned how many people wrote to Captain Watson. I also read that the French president tried to influence this outcome. And talk in behalf of Paul Watson. So this is Emmanuel Macron. I also read that Brigitte Bardot, the famous actress, the famous animal rights activist, spoke in behalf of Paul Watson. Then you have so many, human rights organizations that are, denouncing this treatment. In addition to environmental organizations. With all of that, are you optimistic? Do you think that he will be freed? Or do you think that this is already, we don't know, but the outcome has already been decided and he will end up being extradited to Japan?
I think there are too many steps until an extradition that I think a lot of the public is not necessarily aware of. But again, I'm seeing a failed judicial system. And I think everybody was pretty convinced that there's no way they're going to extradite him to Japan, where he'll be a dead man. Clearly, and because they violate human rights in their judicial in their prison system. And but there was always the question of what are the Danes going to do, since he's an enemy of the Faroes. Clearly, the Faroes have, consider him an enemy, and Greenland as well, because Greenland has they have the actual ability to whale if they want to whale. So yeah, that's I think it's worrying a lot of activists. I think it's a message. I mean, I tried to get US Congress involved. Even Senator Blumenthal called me back on my phone a couple of times. I'm a small state rep, but he called me back, and under his jurisdiction, right? That's Senator Blumenthal in Connecticut. Paul had a proclamation from my governor. I helped with that. He got a proclamation from Governor Ned Lamont that he was a hero for the ocean. And so I haven't heard a thing from my governor's office, and I'm going to contact him directly on his cell phone this afternoon. I plan to do that, Governor Lamont. And Senator Blumenthal and I exchanged a couple of phone calls. He did call me a couple of times. He asked me for an update on Paul. And then he said he wanted to speak to Paul's legal team. And so I put Senator Blumenthal in touch with Francois Zimeray, who is one of the three lawyers behind Paul, and he was the French ambassador to Denmark. He was French ambassador to the human rights, and he was a member of the European Parliament. And he was the one who attacked Japan for violating human rights in their jail system in the European Parliament, and who won against them. Like, they slapped Japan in the European Parliament for that. So he has, I believe, what the top or most famous lawyers in Denmark, and he has also Julie Stage, that's Stager, that's I believe known to be really strong on human rights, and a new young emerging lawyer. So he has a fantastic team. Again, it's you know it, then I also tried to get in touch. I got in touch with his state reps, state senators, because that's what I am in Vermont, and I asked them if they could put me in touch, because I tried Senator Bernie Sanders' office and I tried Peter Welch's office. I get no callbacks. And I asked them to help. And there was this one senator who kept coming back to me and said, "But do they really live here in Vermont?" And I was like, "His wife is French and he's American, and they live here, then live there, come back here, come back there. What's the point of asking me that?" I was kind of shocked. She's lucky I don't remember her name right now, but she's a state senator in Vermont. And I was disappointed with those exchanges. And I have had never been contacted by Senator Sanders or Senator Welch that have met Paul in the past. So where are the Americans? He's American Canadian. I'm not even asking about Trudeau, because I'm not even going to go there. That's your problem. Sorry. But I'm American, and I'm an American state legislator, and I'm baffled at the lack of any of his own, even the state senators and state reps or his US Congress. I'm already like, where are we at with Senator Blumenthal, who's always been supportive of animal rights legislation? Outside of Cory Booker, Senator Blumenthal is a go-to for certain issues when it comes to animal rights. So that's why I've always had a liking for Senator Blumenthal, and he seems to be where people in suffering are and kind of tackling that. I also worked with his son, who is a state rep like me. We became state reps at the same time, representing Blumenthal, Matt Blumenthal. But it's different than his dad. That's normal to different people. I'm not expecting anything, anything to be the same. But his father is incredible with the animal rights and has been a champion. So I think that's why he also kind of communicated back and forth. He tried to help with an elephant. We have a zoo in Connecticut that is a traveling zoo. And one of the elephants died. They never told the public. Then the second elephant died at the Big E, which is the Massachusetts or the Northeast Regional Agricultural Fair. And that elephant died after carrying people on its back during that day and died on concrete instead of where an elephant should die. It was terrible. And then the third elephant has been alone and is in their hands. And even Senator Blumenthal couldn't get that elephant out, but he tried. His office was active on this issue. So just saying, I think he's good there for the animal rights when there's like a big deal. Then Senator Blumenthal will kind of try his best to step in and interfere, intervene. So I'm kind of disappointed at the American politicians for not being more outspoken about Paul's situation, especially his own politicians. I'm really shocked that Senator Sanders, I'm saying it again, Senator Sanders and Senator Welch and his state reps and state senators are not trying to help in this situation. No understanding for that. But anyway, maybe they don't. He was a taxpayer there too, so I'm just curious. He's probably still paying taxes there. What are they doing for their taxpayer? No
Exactly.
idea.
I never I did not think of that, but yeah, he's an American citizen. He should be defended by,
Yeah.
the US.
I don't know if Senator Blumenthal made a statement or not. I don't know. I mean, I had the honor of conversing with François Zimmer before he was hired as one of the three members of his legal defense. But that was quite an incredible. And I put him in touch with Senator Blumenthal. So they talked. After that, I don't know what happened. I have no idea. So, but I didn't see any statements from any US legislator outside of myself. Maybe there are others like states level so that I might not see them in the social media and stuff. I don't know. I just think it's crazy that the US are nowhere there, but France was first. France is always first to respond. I might say it's the opposite with Haiti, where France is the last one to respond, and they're actually suing Haiti, which is incredible, and where the US are the ones who are most helping financially Haiti. But I think that has to do with several things. And that's another conversation.
Yes. And I'm thinking of the words. I watched a video of Paul Watson, and he said, I'm being punished for being kind. That's basically
Yes.
it. And
Yeah.
he's missing, his grandson's birthday, being stuck in that place.
Two sons, yeah,
It
also.
I
Both on your
feel,
son's birthdays, yeah.
yes. And I feel so sorry for him, truly. So sorry for him. Yeah, it's incredible that they felt emboldened to go this far, and to take that step. But and I don't want to, not take seriously all of this, because yes, I take it very seriously, but do you think th there is a silver lining to the situation, that all of this crisis has brought more attention to what's happening in the Faroe Islands, and the incredible, because I learned so much from this situation. I thought I knew a lot about, whaling and the situation there, but just from this situation and the media cover, and how all of the animal rights movement, mobilized around that, I learned so much from this issue, and I'm sure that for, for the general public, it's the same thing. So I'm just wondering if there is a silver lining to all of this.
Yeah, I think you've shown part of the silver lining, and I'm sure Paul is also aware of that. That's probably part of his strength, is he sees the good and the bad. But yeah, the silver lining is that there's a couple of the layers. There's the layer where yes, it's educating even a lot more people that were educated that were not educated on the whaling and the Danish territories and the red pole, red notice from Interpol, or that maybe some people are not even familiar with what's going on in Japan and stuff like that. So it's definitely a form of outreach. I mean, attention, getting attention from international media is a form of outreach. Then there is also the fact that, and another part of the silver lining is the fact that this is a wake-up call, not only for activists and advocates, but it's also a wake-up call for whistleblowers. You have whistleblowers throughout the world, people who are about to, like, I'm a state rep, so like sometimes people will come to me, they want to blow the whistle on something and they need to be protected, and they have to feel confident that they are protected and that nothing, they will not be suffering from being a whistleblower because it could affect their family, their kids, their wife, their husband, whoever, their brother, their parents. So typically, I'd say maybe 1 out of 10 whistleblowers really makes the step in the end. That's how tough it is to be a whistleblower. I've got so many people who tried, were, I was like, I'll make sure I get you with the right journalist, this, that. And then they disappear on the last minute because they're afraid. This is something that could make people more afraid of being a whistleblower. Maybe it could even tell an activist that goes to the Faroes, watch out, because if you get arrested over there, it doesn't seem like the Danish territories uphold any justice at all. It's like they do anything. It's like you called it, Banana Republic. It's clown courts, kangaroo courts, however people call it. I like to call it clown courts. I don't like when we use animal in as an adjective. I think it's a warning signal. We need to be ahead of the curve. We need to show that this is not acceptable. But how do we do that? And that's difficult while Paul is in jail also. It's like that brings it to the story of when I was in the Faroes a couple of weeks ago. I was going in there because, I was there the previous year. The previous year, we're not active, not interfering, nothing, not anything of substance, very friendly, taking pictures, documenting. And I'm like, you need that, but you need the interference. And the interference will bring the eyes of the world. Right now, it's dormant. It's like this. Nobody's paying too much attention. People know about it. So that the idea for me was to possibly do civil disobedience. But then upon reaching those shores, I'm starting to think, and I'm talking to other people that are also involved in this world. And I'm thinking, Paul is in jail in the Danish territories. If anything I do and is construed to be illegal, this could actually, considering the way they're treating him, now it's even more validated. Maybe it's better not to do anything that could be considered illegal, like interfering with a grind or trying to help a juvenile not suffocate on the beach and push him back out. I mean, I have a video when I'm live viewing a tagging, and it was like heart-wrenching. I'm not saying it when I'm talking, and I'm trying to not film the juvenile because I'm like, I'm just looking. Is he upside down? If he's upside down, somebody's got to do something because that means he's about to suffocate. But so I didn't really move and go in the water and move the juvenile, and there were kids that were sent to go and take care of the juvenile. Thank goodness, because this was minutes very long. When you have somebody in distress, it's very long. And but he kept turning back. So when I was looking at him, he was on the side, but not upside down, on the side, normal, on the side. And I was like, oh man, this sucks. Kids were throwing rocks at him. I said, "Stop ro throwing rocks at him. He's your age. He's a kid like you." And then they ran away. And then people started standing in front of my camera equipment, and my camera, my tripod, and my cell phones, trying to do it live at the same time. And I'll never do that again. Only have one going and everything else secured, because it was a mess for me. Because at one point, my camera fell in the sand from the tripod. So catastrophe. That never happened to me. That was the first. But I had to move into the water with my shoes, because I know I was looking at their shoes. Oh, they're wearing regular shoes. Boom. So I go straight in the water with my tripod and my cell phone, to go very close. There was no police line. It's almost never seen. And I was literally run over the guys that had drilled. So typically they drill in the dorsal fin, like three holes, and put like a triangular device, and they put things right through, like these like gigantic screws with nuts, and keep like a geotag there. But they were doing different machinery, and they did it on a juvenile. So right behind the dorsal fin, in this area on the back, right past the dorsal fin, they drilled right above his vertebrae. And then they put a machine, looked like a spider. It's a machine with six wires going away from the little box, a crystal clear box with an antenna. And then they were attaching each of the wires to the sticking out big screws sticking out of its back. I mean, it's so gross. A week after I came back from the Faroes, because I kept wanting to find footage of what a scientific tagging looks like versus their butchery, barbarian style, no science really at the core of it. The reasoning is not for science. They just want to know where they go, what happens. I bet you none of these can ever come back, which is good. They got tagged, they got traumatized, they'll never come back to these ferocious islands. That's what I hope. I don't know if they do come back every year. I would say that if they know they're in the same area, they'd probably stay away from it. But who knows? And so yeah, I was, and then a week later, I'm on a Zoom call. NOAA is showing how they're tagging a whale. It's literally a drone dropping something with three suction cups, bloop, that stays stuck as soon as the back is out of the water, bloop, and it stays on for like a week and a half. That's scientific. They're not interested where this whale is going to go for like weeks and months and where they'll be next year. At the same time, they just want to know where they're feeding right now. They know it's feeding time. They know it's gestation time. They know it's that. And that's science. There's a concept. You don't need to harass these animals for hours in the water, revving your engine and cutting their skin by getting your engines right over them, making a wall of sound and hurting them on the beach. That's incredible. So you're harassing, stressing to the utmost for like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and then they're beached. So their stress level was already danger, we were attacked. Now it's danger, we're gonna die. And then they get drilled into, a couple of them. The juvenile immediately went back to where there was one being drilled in, or that was getting one of the attachments. So when they scream, it's their family that comes. So the juvenile had lost them, but then went back because there was a lot of noise splashing, I guess. Kids were screaming and everything. So I imagine underwater, everything becomes a mess. And then the juvenile that was beaching itself found its family right away. After 7 or 8 attempts from the kids to push it back, instead of coming back to the sand, it started going the other way to join the group. There was also a part of the pod that was waiting in the middle of the harbor. I mean, it's very saddening. They're just waiting for the family to come back. So, and that's just a tagging. That's just a tagging. And I wonder if they didn't play games also with us, because I called the police because I saw the MIKA vessel, the Mika or Mica vessel, harassing them for like over an hour and a half from Lervik. And so I called the police, and I have recorded my phone call. Because first, I wasn't sure if they were going to speak English to me, and I had no idea. And I imagine it's a public call, because it's somebody calling the police about some illegal activity. And it's illegal to harass a dolphin for dolphins for over an hour in the Faroes. So I called them. I mentioned that I could send you the recording, so if you want to hear it, it's interesting. And well, I can even play it now. You can hear it. I asked them, yeah, there's a boat that's been harassing the dolphins. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. We know somebody is there taking pictures. I said, you know, and I can see times 130 with my camera. I can see the guy with his binoculars, like following the pod and slowly pushing them towards Fuglafjord or the next harbor, which is where they wanted to do a slaughter. But the slaughter was said, no, no slaughter. Police said no slaughter. So the police eventually tells me they're not driving the dolphin, the grin, they're not driving the grin to the beach. First, they're not whales, they're dolphins, but I mean, dolphins are part of the whale family, so I'm not gonna go there, but they're not gonna drive those animals to the beach. That's exactly the opposite. They actually did that. So I have the police lying to me and trying to defend somebody that I've been observing for an hour and a half and going over the dolphin pod with his boat as well. So this was harassment, this was illegal in the Faroes. Eventually, at the end, he understands that I have footage of it, and he goes, "Well, if we have time, we might send a boat to go, the police boat to go and check. And if we find that what you're saying is true, then we will do what we have to do." Then I change view spot. I go on the other side of the tunnel to go around where the point that they were all passing towards the next harbor, and I'm with somebody, the only guy who is fighting the grin over there, who lives on the island, who is Faroese, and that's Paddy. So I was with Paddy, and I go out, I put my tripod, and I start setting my camera to try and find them in the water, because with your naked eye, you can't even tell the white spot on my camera and the screen. The boat is like nice and big, you can read the name. So I start setting up, and then a van passes by us. Paddy says, "Oh, I recognize these are the people who do the tagging. They're going to tag them." So now we knew they were driving them into the harbor. So then, boom, we drive to the beach, and we were there before anyone, at the same time as the tigers, almost, because we were right behind them. There was no police line, which was rare. And there's a video being prepared about specifically about tagging in general, and that their tagging is, there's nothing scientific about it. It's just cruel, needless suffering with absolutely no real scientific purpose. And I can't remember right now the name of the entity that does the research, that needs the research. They have a gigantic research vessel that's usually in Klaksvik. I've seen the ship in Klaksvik. No, not in Klaksvik. Oh, now I'm starting to forget my towns in the Faroes. But anyway, so I've seen their research vessel, and they have a website, Visona, something like, I'll figure it out. I'll send it to you. So that's kind of about the Faroes, totally linked with Paul's. That's why we have to be particularly careful and not give the opportunity for the Faroese to accuse us of breaking the law while Paul is in jail, and in jail in Greenland, because the Faroese warned Greenland he was coming back.
Crazy, absolutely crazy and disgusting, like you said. And yeah, I invite anyone who's listening to take action. I will leave links in the description below. Please do something. And thank you, David, for doing something. It feels good to know that you know, people are active and making a difference and trying their best. It's reassuring, yes.
So one thing is, it's only really if you want to participate, you could participate with either Captain Paul Watson Foundation or with Sea Shepherd France. It's only a matter pretty much of a plane ticket. Over there, you might have to split your portion of the food, but you end up in a compound or in an apartment with others, so the housing is covered. That's really the plane ticket, the round trip, and sometimes they cover a portion of the flight. So if people are looking to spend a vacation, they probably will spend less money doing something good, documenting the taggings or the dolphin slaughters, or doing other activities. And we'll spend less money doing that than going on another vacation and, sitting in a cafe and sipping on a couple of margaritas or whatever it is.
And I'm sure the friendships that you built through this are, lifelong friendships. I'm sure you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can spend a week and a half or 2 weeks. Typically, it's 2 weeks is usually required, at least for a ground campaign. The friendships you make are typically for life. Yeah, and you're doing something that's it's basically being on the front line of the fight for animals and against climate change. Literally, that's where the war is. It's in all these hotspots, the Kangay-Maru, the Faroese, Norwegian whaling. Sorry, I have disappearing tattoos. It was vegan ink and it was temporary. It looks kind of weird. I had a phoenix and I had a, what did I have? A phoenix and a dragon, of course. Yeah, so that's all of that. But I've been a troublemaker also in the Connecticut General Assembly.
Let's talk about this. I find it fascinating and incredible that you were an activist long before getting into politics. And let's start with that. How did you get elected? When did you decide to run for office? What motivated you? Yes.
So I came back from, so I went to Taiji in 2013. So I was a Coast Guardian there. And after I came back, that's when I went kind of, I went vegan. I went vegetarian for 2 weeks and then decided to be vegan. I thought it was ridiculous. I was a vegetarian. It was kind of, I was going there for animals. So there's no point in ignoring then a large part of the animal suffering that comes from the dairy industry. Even though I grew up in France and eating everybody and every parts of everybody. And so I guess I did a dramatic shift. And that was after Taiji. Taiji was life-changing for me. I think I realized what's the difference between the dolphin, the fish, the cow, the pig, the dog, the cat, the chicken, the little bird that's being eaten by the coyotes, because the deer eats all the bush, a certain type of bush that protects the little bird. Like, once you understand, like, I was like, yeah, there's no difference between anyone. They're all sentient and everybody has a life, a family life, kids, and do their part. And I think that we are the most, probably the most destructive species out of all animal species. And so anyway, so my life changed after Taiji quite a lot, and before and right after. Went vegan, and then I was kind of becoming this local activist because I learned how to use my camera to pinpoint on what was bad. So I started doing that locally. So I used my camera to document pollution getting straight into the water from our transfer station, Stanford Transfer Station. I started working with the homeless, doing cleanups, but with the homeless and et cetera. I mean, I had volunteers. So I started mixing all kinds of stuff, but mostly I was documenting. And then I was sending an email and I saw, like, oh, the Environmental Protection Agency on whichever level doesn't respond. So I figured then I should put all levels. And I started sending these emails that caused change, because I would have my 100 and something people in blind copy that do the beach cleanups. And then I would send to the mayor, her assistants or special assistants, or his special assistants at the time, and the entire legislative branch, 40 board of reps, and the Environmental Protection local and at state level, and the EPA. And it was such a mess in the two, and copy mostly was in the two, big group in the two, and then in blind copy. And then I would I would tell my volunteers, feel free to reply all, so they understand, because I never talked about myself. I never said, I have a problem with this, or I have a problem with that. I always said, we have a problem with this, and we have a problem with that. And then suddenly you see people that are blind copy that are responding, that are also constituents, makes things a little complicated. Now you're like, wow, nobody's answering, so nobody's doing anything. So somebody's gonna have to answer, and eventually somebody answered. And I would send my emails on Monday mornings or Friday afternoons. See, right now I should be planning a couple of FOIA requests for the city of Stamford that I should send in a couple of hours. But I already sent them two of them on Monday morning, so I'm starting back. I lost my primary, by the way, after six. So 3 terms of 2 years. It's very short terms. And I'm very proud of what I achieved during my 6 years. I think I moved the conversation in different subjects and passed, managed to get some bills passed without necessarily my name on them, because sometimes my name was a poison pill. But always with working with advocates in labor, social justice, housing justice, food access, and working on bills and strategy before the session starts. And always getting our things, and said he's going to be the, or she is going to be the legislative champion. Then we can make sure that it goes from this committee to this committee instead of that committee first, and then we're good. It should, and sometimes it works. It's much harder to pass a bill than kill a bill. There's thousand millions ways of killing a bill. There's only one way to pass a bill.
But then how, who recommended that you try politics? Because for me, you know,
No,
when I
because it makes sense to me. I mean, I'm a steerer. I rock the boat. No matter what I do, I end up rocking the boat. So I might as well focus my energy at rocking the boat where it's needed, not where it's not needed. So I have to always find an area of contention so I can make sure that I'm rocking the boat in the right spot. And sometimes I don't rock the boat. I shake it. I put it upside down and then I throw it back underwater. Because I think sometimes we need to do even more than rocking the boat. I mean, so people were pushing me to run for elections, and I'd gone at one point. I left the Democratic Party. I became a Green Party member because they liked what I was doing locally, and they asked if I could be a placeholder. A placeholder, you're not really doing a campaign. You're just putting a name on that line. You have to petition, so it's easy to petition. It's a small amount of number of signatures. You do that in a week or two. And then you have the position on the ballot, and then you just hope that you get at least 1%, so you don't have to petition 2 years later, and so you could be on the ballot again. So they just asked me to be a placeholder so they can have a ballot placement. I was like, sure, and I didn't care about politics. But then I got frustrated because I was like, okay, I'm not doing a campaign, but my name is on this. I'm not doing anything. And a lot of friends were like, go get back to the Democratic Party because you're not going to be able to do anything in the Green Party. I was like, no, I understand that. And I'm truly a Democrat, a real Democrat. A liberal Democrat. That's the kind of the equivalent to an old French socialist, kind of. And socialist is a kind of a heavy word in the US. It's mixed up with communist. It's mixed up with national socialist. I mean, people get so confused in the US, you have no idea. So it's a word where you have to really come with a following after you use it. But it was very funny. And I said, yeah, I'm going to go back to the Democratic Party. I started running. And then they dismissed me during the election process. I was already knocking doors. I was recognized several times as a candidate. Then they told me, this statute says that you cannot run for this election, but the next one in 2 years. What? Yeah, but this other statute says that what you're saying is actually unclear. And so it doesn't work. And then I had a call from the chair of the party, local party, Josh Fedeli, and he said, no, you can't run because of this and this and this statute. You cannot run. I said, okay, well, I'll have to take the registrar to court because he's the one who has to take me off the ballot. And then I took my registrar to court, and the registrar is a brother of the governor. That was Registrar Ron Malloy, who is the brother of Dan Malloy. So now I'm becoming really an enemy of the local establishment because I'm not holding back. And Ron Malloy is a nice guy, but he was doing what the chair of the party was telling him to do. And that's why I took him to court and I wanted to fight. I said, you've recognized me and stamped me as, and you're saying that this, but so what if I get my petitioning redone, the ones that I did myself by somebody else, and you give me a 3 days to get it done, and I'll get it done by somebody else as reparation. They recognize me as valid. If you're saying that this is what should have been done, then the judge give me the opportunity. The judge was appointed by the governor in his position of judge. There's no way I was going to win this. Almost like a clown court in the Faroese court or in the Greenlandish court. Yeah, sometimes we have those here also locally. And so that's what happened. So they kicked me out. Then the next year, now I was upset and I'm an activist. And you don't do that to an activist. You don't dismiss an activist. And I was like, I'm going to take this one. And for some, by some miracle, no, the miracle was my campaign manager was also vegan, Nina Sherwood, who was a Bernie Sanders delegate at the time before that. And she became my campaign manager and she was a force not to reckon with. I was told I should go and talk to her by one of the insiders of the establishment. He said, oh, you should go and talk to the Nina Sherwood and the people that are like her because you all like to make a lot of noise. Okay. Then I discovered Nina Sherwood. Thank you for telling me. And then Nina managed to convince the delegates. It's all about delegates and endorsement. Unfortunately, the voters are kind of disenfranchised or they disenfranchise themselves because they don't go to vote on the primary. And she turned the delegates around saying, there is nobody who is going to work harder on the issues that you care about and your constituents care about than David Michel. He multitasks and that's what he does. And she sold me to everybody and is unfortunate because she was right. So once I got the endorsement and then I was eventually elected, we knew I was going to get elected because the district is gerrymandered for Democrats to win. So automatically the Democrat wins the general election. The only real election is a primary. That's where it counts. And unfortunately, the primaries are not open. So not everybody that's going to have repercussions from whoever wins can vote on it. It should be open primaries. That would be the democratic process.
You
And it's
said
not.
you lost the primary. Now you've
Oh,
done
so
it.
the latest, yeah, this primary I just lost, I lost the endorsement. They eliminated my delegates one by one during the last 6 years. So it's not like
Incredible.
I didn't see it coming.
So you've done a great job, and your constituents, might want, the opportunity to vote for you again. Why are they pushing you out?
So the establishment is pushing me out because I'm saying you talk about affordable housing, yet one third of our new homeless in Fairfield County are elderly retirees and one third of the children from the lower income. And we're not building anything affordable to those two parts of society that are becoming homeless. And if today there's nothing built, that means that whoever is falling under in the next 2 years will be homeless. Without room in shelter, without Section 8 vouchers, and without et cetera. So you talk about affordable housing, all you do is incentivize developers to build what they want, but not what we need. And that's enough. And they keep building in small neighborhoods, so the developers have more value in what they build instead of just building downtown where you should be building your buildings. Downtown for the middle class and for the low income and for the retirees, you retrofit, fix, remediate historical structures, keep their historical value, keep protecting the environment around it. So keep the environmental standards strict, refurbish, lower income, elderly, whatever they pay goes towards ownership. State program. We've done it before, it works. But for the last 3, 4 decades, it's all been for developers. Unscrupulous, predatory developers in Stanford, Connecticut, and I think the rest of the US, pretty much. So if our Democrats are not going to be fighting for housing justice, they're not going to fight for capping the rent. They're not going to fight for they're not going to fight for democratic things, then of course somebody who is a populist and an insane populist can have a chance at making it. Because it's either those who don't do anything or the insane guy. That's the problem in politics. If the Democrats, if my party was doing what they're supposed to do, we would not be in the situation we're in.
And yes, I completely agree with that stance.
Housing crisis, people can't find food. Animals being abused, Department of Environmental Protection being nowhere when big corporations are polluting. Everything is upside down. And it's under leadership under the Democratic Party. What's happening? Why do you think Trump can make it that far? Because we're letting him get that far. That's why.
Thank you for making that point, because they always say Trump, this Republican Party and all. But can
Oh,
you
it's never about what we're doing. We're doing everything right.
exactly
We're the
can
Democratic Party. We're the
oh.
protectors of reproductive rights. We're the protectors of the vaccine. We're the protectors of this, of that, and this and that. Yet, looks like the world is going to shit to me. I'm sorry, I'm saying it pretty bluntly, but that's why I'm sorry.
Of course, you're passionate, and yeah, this is something I thought about a lot. How they're responsible in a two-party system. You're also responsible of the success of the other party by failing. But
And by the
anyway,
way,
yes.
it brings me to a thing. The vegan world and the animal rights activists, we have to get involved in other things than just because it's more difficult for environmental advocates to get into animal rights advocacy. But we agree with all this and we can be there. We can lead also people to join us in the animal rights movements. And I've been putting these connections between the animal rights world and environmental orgs on the state level. We're lucky in Connecticut because the HSUS, the Connecticut Humane Society of the United States, this chapter here is run by Annie Hornish. She's the director, she's vegan for the animals, and it's not what you'd expect when you hear HSUS. The Connecticut Sierra Club has now wildlife divisions. And the one in Connecticut, there have always been allies of my caucus. So even the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters, same thing, the NYLCD. These are not entities you'd think would get involved in animal rights stuff or animal rights bills. Yet in Connecticut, they have been supported. We've been starting to work all together. Now, what happens on the other side with the hunters? They're redoubling and tripling their assaults now and trying to put in really bad bills. And we are in danger in Connecticut. Because we came up so forcefully, now there's an equal and opposite reaction, which doesn't mean they're going to succeed, and they should not succeed. If we are a democratic state, this is not a state of hunters, but the hunters are going to try and pass really terrible bills this year. They're going to try to pass hunting black bears. They keep trying to do that. I have this nice speech describing how stupid a bill is that everybody is passing because the Senate is holding the House hostage. They're holding seven environmental bills in their hands, saying, we're going to kill the seven environmental bills if you don't let that black bear bill come up to the Senate. So I went after the language and said, of course, I'm voting against that. But I also knew that my colleagues were going to vote in favor of it just because we had to save those seven other bills. But saying that's very difficult. Animal rights bills are very difficult. We finally passed the Greyhound ban. Woof. But we were in one of the last two states. So every year I'm like sweating. Are we going to pass it this year? What's going on? It seems to be no-brainer. Everybody's fine with it, but it still doesn't come up in both chambers. Because, Connecticut was the first constitution. And so it's the same way that Washington works, except we're a little bit more flexible. A bill can be born in the Senate and then come to the House. But it has to go through both chambers, whichever order. So usually we the House of the people we are the ones whose bills become hostage of the Senate, and we have to pass their bills if we want some of our bills. It's absurd. Every year it's been like this since I've been there. It doesn't mean we don't pass good bills, but
Yeah, and every year you have a army of Americans going to Canada in order to hunt bears.
really.
Yes, there's a big tourism industry of
Which
Americans.
province? Is it legal in all the provinces?
I think, yes, most provinces.
It's easy to explain that. They think There's always this convincing in within the legislative bodies that hunters pay for permits and they bring money and conservation. Conservation, forget, I'm not even going to go there. But so you, and usually you have your own agencies like DEEP, my agency is Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Wow, those two together. Crazy. Dan and Lloyd merged them together. While they were laying the Algonquin frac gas pipeline through the state of Connecticut. So, God forbid, there was an incident with a frac gas pipeline in the state of Connecticut. The enforcer and the one who has to explain what they allowed were the same agency. So, okay. Wow. But like DEEP in Connecticut, there was a research done, 70% of DEEP has hunted or are hunters. That's the mentality in our environmental protection agency. So the wildlife division is run in part by hunters. How does that work? And every time there's so you have that, but yet what they don't seem to understand is a lot more people want to do ecotourism than the few hunters. Hunters are a dwindling down number. They have becoming not important, but they just talk so loudly. In the legislation, they come and when they come and testify, all of them, and they all just repeat the same thing for hours and hours and without end. And they can say the same about animal rights advocates, but there's a lot more people wanting to respect nature than people wanting to use and rape nature and for their fun and entertainment. So, and this is where the agencies, you know, that the agencies are derelict in their mode of thinking. They're really from a time that's past. Those people who still let this kind of stuff happen or belong to the past. Now, people, the majority of people, the majority of the public wants to protect bears, not have them hunted. So it should make sense that you would make more money at doing ecotourism and have a safe environment where you can see bears in their natural habitat. You'd make more money at that as a government than selling permits for hunting. But such an old mentality.
And just a few words to say, it's the worst kind of hunting. You know, you just sit there and put, you know, some food somewhere, and you wait for the bear to approach, and then you kill it. And you do nothing with the bear. You know, you don't eat it. You just take a picture with the animal, and that's it.
Let me bring some humor in this horrible world of hunting and politics. I knew a certain year that they were going to come hard with hunting bills, so I was purposely putting out bills they would hate, but that I would not really work on. So I had one bill that was you can't drink and hunt. Does it make sense? Yes, you're using a firearm or a weapon or whatever, bow and arrow. You can't drink doing that. That would pass. And so I put a bill, you can't drink and hunt. So those guys that have to think, well, shit, I thought I was going to drink my beers up in a tree while some innocent animal comes and I can shoot it. If I can't drink and do that, I think I'll just go to a local bar. I'd rather you go to the local bar than you go in the woods and violate the sanctity of nature. That was one of my bills. Another bill was no hunting within 400 feet of a blaze trail. A blaze trail is not only trails, but whatever anybody has used as a shortcut, and you can see people walk there, that's a blaze trail. And 400 feet was so much, it basically made almost all of Connecticut impossible to. So I just dropped those, but I knew I had an important black bear bill to put out in against their black bear bill that was stupid. So now in the state of Connecticut, you can shoot a bear if you feel that a bear is threatening you. So now you see the Yahoo going in the woods, wants to shoot a bear, finds a bear and just shoots him and says, "No, I felt like he was going to kill me. That's why I shot him." We had a police officer off duty in his backyard shoot Bobby the Bear, number 217. Hashtag 217 Bobby the Bear, and he picked up the shells so they couldn't see where he shot the bear from. And then DEEP, before the district attorney, made a statement that he was acting in self-defense, when in the report, he went back inside his house and then came back out with a gun to shoot the bear. That's not self-defense. That's murder. And that's an off-duty police officer. And guess where that was? The town of Newtown. Do you know why Newtown is famous in the world? The
This,
school shooting, the most
oh,
famous
yes.
shooting, Connecticut. Incredible. Incredible. And that guy got away with it. Normally, you're not allowed to use firearms within residential area. And he's a police officer, off duty. It's incredible. We have really okay, so this year they're going to try black bear hunting in Connecticut. They're going to try, I think they might succeed, unfortunately, because the chair of environment is in favor of that, which is processing facilities for rabbits. They want to open, a farmer has been asking for that, one farmer, one senator, one rep, and that's enough. Almost to pass it now. Everybody's like, oh, we want to eat rabbit, but you can eat rabbit. You can go to the charcuterie and get your rabbit right now. You can go to the supermarket and buy rabbit. And it's very unpopular. It's actually people would rather see rabbits like our fluffy, regular Connecticut rabbits in their backyard than on their plate. So I've argued with DOAG, the Department of Agriculture, do you have a study that shows that people suddenly now want to eat rabbit? No. What triggers you to be in favor of this processing facility that you will have to inspect when you can't even do a proper job with the shelters, the state animal shelters? No answer. And that's the DOAG commissioner. They're all a joke. They're jokes, yet they get away with it, even if it's in public hearing. So sometimes I can kill a bill by doing that, but I don't know. Most of my colleagues will think, oh, it's in my culture. I like to raise rabbits and barbecue, da da da. Why would you like want to get in the way of that? I'm like, I'm not getting in the way of that. You can get your rabbit. Just we don't need a processing facility in the state of Connecticut. And we have the actual federal processing facilities. Yeah, but there's a waiting. You have to wait for 6 months to a year to have your rabbit skinned and processed and to get it back. Okay, so we're facing that. We can talk about the legislation on the kangaroo skins that was a couple of years ago. Annie, again, she's the one who brings the best bills. Annie Hornish from the Connecticut HSUS brings me this language for the kangaroos. She goes, I don't think he'll go anywhere. I think, Annie, I don't think he'll go anywhere neither, but let's put it through the system. And I usually typically put between 28 and 40 bills every year when it's the first session. There's a long session and short session. Long session, I can introduce bills. Short session is the committees. That means it's whatever my chair likes that he will introduce to the committee. So mostly short session, you can't really pass an animal right bill. It has to be done in the long in a long session, the first year right after you get elected or re-elected, because it's 2 years terms. It's horrible. So it's like 1 year you can be effective, and the second year you're like, because it's an election year, so we can be controversial because we want to make sure people support us so we can get our power back. That's what it's about. So I put in this bill, and I kid you not, the Australian consulate got in touch with me, sent me an email. Rep Michel, I don't understand. This was the acting consul at the time of New York, Australian Consul of New York at the time, acting. So I guess it was in between, somebody who was stepping up in the seat that's not theirs. And saying to me that I don't understand what you have against this. Kangaroos are a nuisance. We have too many of them. This is a conservation practice. And instead of wasting, I think she might have gone into the waste. Blah, blah, blah. I said, well, first, my question would be, what do they do with the joeys? The joeys are the juvenile kangaroos. And oh, yeah, I heard that they just beat their head on the trunk of their cars to kill them, or they end up orphaned. That is really already a bother for me. Second, I said, you are telling me that there are too many. I believe in the three laws of ecology and that nature balances itself. You don't need to do anything as a human, zero, in order for nature to balance itself with whatever is happening in that area. So, who are you to tell me there are too many kangaroos? And there are scientists who are saying the opposite. Well, it is debatable because one side says this and one side said that. So she's trying to dismiss it by saying, oh, well, one side says that, but the other side says the opposite. And then eventually, on the phone, I started, I don't know if I put it in writing, but I started asking her, what I don't understand is, you know, you're acting like a lobby right now. You're lobbying me, but you're paid by the taxpayers, Australian taxpayers, to handle social services for Australian above. So I'm not understanding what the role of the consulate is right here. And eventually she said that her office had set up an appointment with my office. And then I looked in my government emails and there was this acknowledgement that we'll be meeting that time with a lobby. And I usually tell my office, I'm fine with meeting anyone. They might be in for a bad time. They just have to know who they're coming to see. And if they know that I'm not in favor of what they shouldn't waste their time or my time. And I had this appointment set up through my office with a lobbyist that represents the cells of the skins of kangaroos. Eventually at that time, I said, I canceled that appointment. You're acting like a lobbyist. It's inappropriate for somebody from the consulate to even go that far and help like a business entity from Australia to set up an appointment with me when I'm entirely against them. They would not have a good time with me. And I said, plus, you're too late. My bill doesn't need to go anywhere. I know Adidas is always making the effort. And I know now through a statement, a national statement that you should have already on your desk, that Nike is going to stop buying that stuff. And then that was the end of our communications. But I was shocked that the Australian consulate was going out of their way to come after me for putting a bill that was against the use of an Australian product that involved cruelty, animal cruelty. It was pretty interesting. It was fun in a way because I was like, you know, my father's Australian. So I've never been to Australia yet, but I'm not sure I want to go at this point. So
No.
yeah, that was an interesting moment. I know Adidas is working on that. My understanding through somebody who works at Adidas is that they are intending to go vegan by 2035 or 2040. So it's in the works as well. I'm surprised they haven't made a public statement yet because the entire vegan world is sort of waiting for that and asking Adidas, especially in New York, if they can make a statement. I'm not against asking them to make a statement. They need to make a statement, but I also know that they're already working on that. And I'm guilty of having a bunch of shoes that are made of recycled net from the oceans. Ghost nets, and ghost nets are the most it's like a killing machine that is responsible for a lot of life disappearing very fast in the ocean. So that was a collaboration with Parley. So a lot of my shoes are Adidas with Parley collaboration. I think they call it Prime Knit, KNIT. But I invite more people to literally directly contact Adidas and ask them when are they planning to be vegan. And they have the Stella McCartney line that's already all vegan. They have the all the Parley stuff, which is all vegan. So that's already kind of a big part of their products. So I'm trying to encourage them to just continue. And I know somebody who works there that told me that they intend to be fully vegan by 2035. They even have this recycling shoes program. Like, if you know you're not wearing them anymore and they're just, you can send them back, they take them apart, and then you rebuild new shoes with the parts that they take apart. So, right back from the consumer to the manufacturer and being remanufactured. I think that's incredible. And not many companies do that. But I'm a fan, particularly of Parley and this whole idea of Parley.tv. I'm giving them a little spot. They're very supportive of Paul. They also were in the Danish territories with their cameras. Vaquita is a French news and social media network. They're doing pretty good. They're covering Paul every time he's there at the, going to a court case. Sea Shepherd France, obviously, Captain Paul Watson Foundation. All interesting to support, and that's where you find the latest information. You can go to the CPWF UK. They post a lot as well. I tend to stick to CPWF and CPWF UK and Sea Shepherd France. That's my main source of information. Vaquita and Lania, the president of Sea Shepherd France. I mean, she is poll number two. She's definitely another force not to reckon with, and she's genuine. She's extremely loyal and devoted to Paul, protective of Paul, which is so appreciated. And based on all the values that we know of Paul, he's a kind man and he's arrested for kindness. And while the criminals are the accusers. Denmark, think about that. Mette Frederiksen, Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen, head of Ministry of Justice of Denmark, Peter Hummelgaard, think about that. Because right now it looks like your Danish Ministry of Justice is corrupt, biased, and unfair and unjust.
And David, now that you're leaving the political scene and resting from this world of corruption, and you gave us a window into that kind of corruption, who is replacing you?
No one is replacing me, but my replacement on my seat is not somebody who has the interests of
But
animals
by that, I
or
mean,
yeah.
who is going to take up the fight? Of
Well, I have the so Annie Hornish, as a matter of fact, that I mentioned several times, was a legislator for one term, and she managed to create the Connecticut Animal Advocacy Caucus. It's a caucus of legislators that are for animal rights.
and you
And
were the chairman of that.
I had 20 Democrats and 10 Republicans, at least, that were part of that caucus. And so I was co-chair. I assigned another co-chair who's Republican, Nicole Claridis-Ditria. It's you would not think that, but when we're confronting people either in the caucus or in public hearing, I'm more like the good cop and she's the bad cop. So it and it pleases me because I'm usually the bad cop. And she's absolutely phenomenal, Nicole Claridis-Ditria. And Kathy Kennedy, two Republican women. They got cornered by the bully hunters of our state. They were invited to a town hall, and it was a trap made by hunters who tried to bully them. Two amazing women legislators, and mind you, that are Republican and that are in favor of protecting animals. And then on the Democratic side, I need to replace myself, or I need to find a replacement, somebody that will be strong. And I have an idea of who it is. He was a former chair of environment. He doesn't necessarily told what he does what he's being told, which is a virtue in that caucus. If they don't want to pass a very good bill that probably 90% of Connecticut would support, then it looks bad on them, but not on the caucus. The caucus is going to continue pushing. So we have like a version of the TIPSPA, which is basically the traveling shows with exotic animals. We want to ban this out of Connecticut. We are trying to cut off the puppy mill supply chain in Connecticut by banning shops, pet shops from selling dogs and cats. We only have 15 now, I think 17 or 18, because since New York stopped, now they're moving into Stamford in my own town and in Connecticut. And so I think we're up to 19 now. We had 12 or 13 when we were fighting those shops. And we've had difficulty passing that in Connecticut. For over a decade, since before I was there, there's been a fight on banning pet shops from selling dogs and cats. And it still hasn't happened. DUAG has been fighting that. Connecticut DUAG has been fighting that. So who's going to replace me? Somebody who is compassionate, somebody who is kind, and somebody who is not afraid of asking the right questions. And that will be the person that will be replacing me. I'm thinking of Mike D'Amico, State Representative Mike D'Amico. And he's not from the environmental rights circles, but he's been one of our strongest allies in the Committee of Environment. And he used to be the chair of environment and was He was the one who actually helped us pass in the House the shark fins ban on my first year. It was such a crazy event. They even played videos of sharks on the squawk screens. Nobody knew they were like TV screens. He thought it was like the old school little lights. It was like their TV screens. And they played videos and they played Baby Shark. While we had a little pause, they played the music from Jaws, and the whole General Assembly in the House started laughing. It was quite a phenomenal event my first year. We had a lot of fun that year, and it was the year before the pandemic. And then he was no longer the chair of environment 2 years later. They put somebody who's more moderate on environment and on animal rights, who is actually in favor, said himself he's in favor of processing facilities for rabbits, and who's been kind of in the middle on hunting black bears. He's against, but he's not against, but he's against. And unfortunately, he's not been somebody who's been sticking to his word. Joe Gresco, my chair of environment, has not been sticking to his word. And hopefully, in Connecticut, people will be putting pressure on him, particularly from his district, to make sure that they put pressure. By the way, how you find out who is a legislator in your district? You go to cga.city.gov. That's Connecticut General Assembly, cga.city for Connecticut, .gov for government. And then you look for your legislator somewhere. You'll put in the search engine, and it'll take you to the right link. You put in your address, and you'll find out who's your state rep and state senator.
I'm so happy to have had this conversation with you because you're a straight talker. You're not you haven't been bought by the establishment. You are truthful. You're what we want our politicians to be. What would you say to animal rights activists or vegans who might be tempted to, go into politics.
Run for politics. Primary. They hate primaries. Everybody hates primaries. They hate primaries, then primary them. You don't even have to run a full campaign. You can influence their campaign by putting pressure. You say, I will run against you. If you don't want me to run, I want you to cover animal rights in your legislation. If you don't cover animal rights, and if you don't vote the right way, then I will primary you even the next term. But so you tell me what you want to do. If not, I'm running against you. I'm putting my name on the ballot. No way I'm not. And if you start, it's not only about voting, it's before you vote, putting pressure on the elected officials. You want my vote? You want my vote? Then you take care of animals, you take care of human animals, and we're fine. Meaning you take care of protecting animals, animal rights, you take care of housing justice. You take care about food access, real equity, mental health support, peer-to-peer support covered by insurance, aid in dying, and all that stuff. I'm yours. Tell me where you're not supportive of that, and we need to talk about it. Put
Well,
pressure. You cannot go at them with all your entire agenda, but you can certainly go at them with your top of your agenda and say, I will run against you. And you find out everything you need to do to run. You don't have to be endorsed. You can be just a troublemaker in the wake, and they don't like that. Nobody likes being primaried. That forces you into, especially in Connecticut, that forces you into a campaign in the summer. That means goodbye to your summer. Now you have to knock doors every day. And if you knock doors every day, you basically do it like this. You work during the week. After work, you do 2, 3, 4 hours, whatever you can put. And go knock doors. And on the weekends, you do Saturday, you can do from 11 to 5 or 11 to 6. There's a time where you're bothering people, so you might want to figure that out. And then on the Sundays, it's less because Sundays is more critical. People are resting. And so you do like maybe 11 again to maybe 4 or 3 p.m. It depends. Or you can go later and you can go earlier. But if you're going to run and you want them to like shake in their boots, knock doors, because a lot of them don't knock doors, and you could win just by knocking doors.
wonderful. You've heard it, people. Run. Run for office.
If you work from home, if you can work from your phone, that's an advantage, obviously. If you have a if you're paid salary from from 8 to 8 to 6, it's certainly more difficult, but you're excused from the legislation when you're at work. The thing is, you want to be there when it's time to vote, especially. But part of your work is the first part of your session is bill introductions and through committees, and every legislator is a part of, in Connecticut, three committees. I was on environment, planning and development, which is zoning, and transportation. I was kicked out of public health. Not kicked out officially, but because I was gonna actually change some big bills that the speaker at the time wanted. So I was not very welcomed in public health, although I was doing a heck of a job and I was pushing for really good bills in public health. So you pick your three committees, your areas of interest, clearly environment, animal rights is going to be environment. You can put public safety or you could put judiciary and things like that. You have three committees of cognizance. The bills go through the system and they're discussed by the committee. Then if you're strong enough at pushing for your bill, then they get a public hearing. For a bill to get a public hearing in its first year is a huge step already. And then it could die, or then you could save it and make sure that it goes out of committee. And that's the first half. If it comes out of committee, now it's going to be called in the House or the Senate chamber, wherever it started from. And then it's going to be called in both chambers, and that's the other half of the session. So that half of the session, which is usually, we only have 6 month session in Connecticut, shame on us, not a full year. So typically on the long session, you're really at the Capitol 4 or 5 times a week, only in the end of session, which is end of April, the whole month of May and early June, and then it's over. That's it. And it starts in mid-January.
And let me ask you, if people have questions or need,
Oh, contact me,
yes.
please. Email, cell phone, fine. You're fine to share both. My cell phone number is 914-843-7545. You have it in my email, and then my personal email, free to use. They can use my government email if it's about government stuff in Connecticut, which is David dot, my last name, Michel, Michel, at cga.ct.gov, CGA for the Connecticut General Assembly. And everybody's welcome to send me emails. I answer, I'm responsive, I've always been responsive. You know, somebody is falling to homelessness, please email me immediately in Connecticut. Anything, housing access, whatever issues, bullying, whatever, I'm here to help. Until the end of December, first week of January. And then I resume my personal life and my activism.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, David. Thank you for having answered my questions. Thank you for all of your great work in politics. And of course, you're always welcome to come back on the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.